And so what I saw was a young, growing organization that is hardworking and passionate and wants to be great, and a wonderful group of people to work with. And so it was like, you know, this is kind of a no-brainer for me, and that's how it feels, and I can't wait to get up there and get started.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
Today is Wednesday, May 21st, 2014, and you are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram, and with me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
Scotty, it's the offseason. How you doing, man?
I'm hanging in there.
We got a big show with Rusty Simmons today, so hopefully you're fired up in addition to hanging in there. As you know, the Warriors just stole Steve Kerr from the New York Knicks, so you know we got big things to talk about in the Warriors update, and that's going to be the only segment of the show. We're going to welcome in Rusty Simmons, the Chronicle beat writer for the Warriors, and cover all things Kerr, including the upsides of the Warriors signing him as the head coach, the downsides, and whether, all things considered, we think it's a good or a bad move. Before we get there, quick show note. It's our normal Uber take. You guys know how I feel on it. Uber's the best app you can download for any phone. Once you got it on there, if you need a cab but you don't feel like going through the drama of flagging it down or getting the money to pay for it, all you got to do is press a button and it comes to you.
And when you sign up, look for a promo code box, enter the word huddle, and you'll get $30 off your first ride.
That's exactly right. Now, before we turn it over to us and Rusty, why don't we get a quick sense of Steve Kerr's stats to date?
Steve Kerr really has been on an improbable basketball journey since he started his career. Not even recruited out of high school, he somehow talked Lute Olson into letting him play, wins a national championship with Arizona, gets drafted into the NBA, proceeds to win 5 NBA championships, plays under Phil Jackson, Greg Popovich. Then he goes on to be a GM with the Phoenix Suns from 2007 to 2010, and they make it to the Western Conference Finals in his last year as GM. So pretty remarkable career, but perhaps what a lot of people forget is he has dropped one of the most iconic verses related to basketball that we have ever heard on the rap/hip-hop scene. Here is Steve Kerr on the mic.
Give Kerr the ball, give Kerr a hand. I'll drill it in from three-point land. Ask Gumby, ask the ref.
We don't do justice, we're the best.
W-I-L-D.
Couple of things. One, that rap is absolutely amazing. It's the most canned thing you've ever seen. And if you get a chance, check out the video and you'll see Kerr not only dropping verses, but also wearing the tightest pink shirts, or shorts rather, anyone's ever worn. Two, and I never get to do this, Scotty, but I think you might have been wrong on the facts there. I don't think he won a championship. I think he only made it to the Final Four.
All right, well, that may be true. He should have won a championship.
Fair enough. I'm never right. Had to say it. Enough from us. Let's welcome in Rusty. So we have the distinct pleasure of welcoming the San Francisco Chronicle's beat writer, Rusty Simmons, once again back into the huddle. What's going on, Rusty?
Oh, not a lot. I appreciate you guys having me back.
Oh, geez, man. I can't believe we somehow talked you into coming back. We really appreciate it. As you know, Steve Kerr has been hired. Somehow the Warriors stole him away from the New York Knicks. So we brought you in principally to get your thoughts on that. But before we move off to it, I got to see how you feel about the whole Mark Jackson thing. Did you expect the Mark Jackson firing going into the offseason?
I did. I was leaning that way, but I think the Warriors ownership and front office was being honest when they said that they wouldn't make a decision until the season was over. That's the way Joe Lacob has operated with all of his businesses in the past, is that at the end of the fiscal year, he evaluates everybody and makes some hirings and some firings. And I assume that's what they were going to do here, and I think it is. I know it came quickly. It was only a couple of days after the season ended, but I really think they thoroughly looked at it after the season and made a decision then.
Did you ever get a chance to see some of Jackson not letting others into his circle? I mean, that seemed to be the big criticism by management, was there was rumors he kept Jerry West out of practices, things of that nature. Did you see that?
You could feel it. I won't say that I saw any of it, but you could feel in a lot of things that Mark Jackson had an ego, and he deserved it. He's never failed at anything in his life. He was a great player, turned himself into a great broadcaster, and then was a successful coach. So He deserved to have an ego, and he did. He wasn't listening to what other people were saying a lot of the times. He had a tight-knit group, and he believed in them and didn't really want to hear from anybody else. And that's a hard way to operate in the NBA now. There are already so many egos. You have to be able to dance around for a little bit, listen to everybody. You can go back to your own decision, but you have to listen to other people, and I don't think he did that very well.
I love that you're pointing out that he deserved the ego. You know, we hear a lot about how he kind of elevated himself above some of the other members of the organization. I've never really thought about him factoring in what he's accomplished in the league, so you're right to do it. I want to move to Kerr, but let me ask a follow-up question quickly. Do you really believe that Lacob had made up his mind going into the offseason? I mean, just the only reason I even question it is because we heard about all these possible replacements, all these rumors, including Kerr, way before the deal was made. That made me feel like they knew what the hell they were doing, that if he didn't get out of the Clippers series, that they would have fired his ass for sure. You don't think that's true, huh?
No, I don't, and I may be naive in thinking that, but that is Lacob's history, is that he does wait until, you know, the end of a fiscal year, the end of a season to make a move. And look, there were a lot of things pointing to the firing. I think that's why most people expected it, the fact that he didn't get an extension, that all they did was pick up the option for his final year, that you could see some of the communications were starting to break down. You could see Mark Jackson feeling the pressure and bringing it up more and more often in media sessions. So there were a lot of things that pointed to it. I think the Warriors were probably having discussions about whether to bring him back or not, or who would be other options. But I truly do believe that the final decision was not made until 2 days after the season was over.
Huh, that's interesting. All right, man. Well, I've alluded to it. Let's throw it down and talk about it. Steve Kerr just got signed by the Warriors on a 5-year deal worth $25 million. No joke, money-wise. I think he's somewhere, either top three or top four of the highest paid coaches in the league, despite not having coached a single game in his otherwise pretty illustrious NBA career. Have you spent time with the team since it's the offseason? Have you not really got to see the guys?
I've talked to a couple of the guys on the phone, and then obviously the brass, the Warriors front office and management have been around. They were all around for Tuesday's news conference when they finally introduced Steve Kerr to the media. So it's been interesting. It's been intermittent, trying to get calls back from players and trying to catch up with people as they're running around interviewing coaches and then going to the Chicago Combine last week. So people are in and out, but the phones still work, it seems.
I mean, what's the tone of the players? Because one thing that I noticed, which I thought might be pretty telling, was none of the players came out on Twitter and said anything related to the Kerr firing. It was almost like a policy to remain silent among the players.
It wasn't just Twitter, too. It was all social media. Nothing on Instagram. I mean, nothing. The silence has been deafening. So, what do you think, man? What's the reaction?
Yeah. That's the way the players were advised. He was hired or reached an agreement in principle a week ago Tuesday, and the inking of the contract didn't happen until Monday, 6 days later. So the players were advised not to make public comments until everything was official, until he had signed, and that's a pretty normal thing. And you know what? I think the silence, on top of being advised not to say much, I think the silence speaks to what I'm hearing from them, which is it's a wait-and-see thing. They loved Coach Jackson, and I think it's in their makeup to play hard for anybody. There aren't troublemakers there, so I don't think anybody's going to say much bad. But it's a wait-and-see thing. They don't know if Steve Kerr is a good coach. They know he's smart. They know that he's likable. But it was wait and see when Mark Jackson showed up, and it has to be wait and see when Steve Kerr gets here.
You know, I would love your opinion on this. I was a huge proponent of getting rid of Mark Jackson. I actually like Steve Kerr for all the reasons we'll talk about in a second. My biggest fear was how the players would react. And I know how high character they are, but, geez, I've never spent, a single day in my life with them, whereas you've actually traveled around with them. Do you think this team will welcome in Kerr despite the relationship they had with Jackson and how close they were, not only as a team, but also in a spiritual sense? I mean, they had the whole religious connection as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's a real fear. The players saw Jackson as more than just a coach. He was an uncle figure to him, a friend, a pastor. They truly, when they say they loved him, they truly loved him. They thought very, very highly of him and will have a relationship with him for the rest of their lives. But I think they do. It is a locker room made of really high character guys. On top of the fact that it's a bunch of hoop heads. They love being at the arena. They're not going to stop working hard, even if they are unhappy with what management's doing. They love the game and like being in the gym. I said the other day, and I think this is true, Draymond Green would play hard in a pickup game that I was coaching. You know, he doesn't know any other way. So I think they're going to play hard for Kerr. I think they're going to welcome him. The big question for me will be, after the first skid, they're going to run into a roadblock where they lose three or four in a row, and then do they start questioning it a little bit?
Sure.
Jackson had imbued them with so much confidence. Do they start questioning management and coaching and wondering where the organization is going?
That's exactly right. Well, I tell you what, let me organize our thoughts a little bit because I want to get into the nuts and bolts of this thing. Let's break it into three sections. The upsides of the move, what we like what we like about Steve Kerr as a possible coach, the downsides, what possible pitfalls do we see, and then finally, all things considered, do we actually like the move? Let's start with the upsides. What do you guys think? Are there things that stick out to you about Kerr as a possible coach?
To me, the most exciting thing is that I had to watch that Warriors offense all last year. And at times it would slow down to a snail's pace and was isolation-based and dumping it down to the block to a guy who wasn't great at scoring out of that position. And they have too much talent on that offensive end to go through stretches like that. And I think Steve Kerr knows that. He's been preparing for this for years. He sent the Warriors on their plane with a 16-page electronic manifesto of things that he wanted to do with the Warriors. And I think he's played for enough different coaches that he understands everything about offense. I think he'll use some triangle elements. He really wants to play fast. And if instant first the offense isn't there, that doesn't mean you have to bring it back to the top of the key and set up a play. It means that you just flow into an offensive set. And I think he understands all of that and wants to bring that to the Warriors and has smart enough, skilled enough guys to do what he wants.
Couple of things. One, you have got to get your hands on that 16-page PowerPoint manifesto. I want to see that in the Chronicle, Rusty. I've read about that so often. It sounds like it's so awesome. I'm going to lean on you to shed a little bit of light on it. Two, couldn't agree with you more. Watching that Warrior offense under Mark Jackson was one of the most frustrating things I've done as a fan. Did a phenomenal job on the defensive side, but watching the offense come to a screeching halt was just awful. And, I mean, we haven't seen Kerr run an offense, but at least from what I can tell on the press conference side, he's saying all the right things. You nailed one of them that, you know, if the fast break doesn't work, don't just go into a post-up ISO situation. Start getting spacing. Use the movement of the ball to get yourself another shot. The idea of bringing in even just small portions of the triangle offense, even though I'm not even really sure what the hell that means, makes me pretty fired up. I just, you know, I look at the triangle offense as like this kind of golden, amazing thing that has worked so well that I love the idea of it here. And then also, I heard him talk about getting Curry more shots with less dribbling, that he doesn't like how he's got to work his way around all these screens, that it would be better to space the floor and actually find him open locations where we can take advantage of his legendary shot-making ability, you know?
Yeah, and that's a perfect point. Curry is a dead-eye shooter when he has an instant of open air, open space. And right now, he has to work so hard dribbling, decision-making, running off screens, all of the – he's a slight dude, you know, and when he's running off screens and going through that and playing physical and then has the mental side of it also where he has to dribble and be a decision-maker, I think they're asking a lot from him right now. So if a quarter of the time you can get him off the ball and find him some space, I think that would take a lot off him and maybe make him better down the stretch with decision-making because he wouldn't be so fatigued at that point.
Yeah, and I think although we've all mentioned it, Kerr hasn't coached a game, we're not sure really what his offense would be. We did see him as the GM in Phoenix for a couple years oversee what was a very, you know, open, fast-paced, move-the-ball type offense in that Phoenix team. You know, that was D'Antoni, the whole 7 seconds or less. Hopefully we'll play more defense still than that team.
Right.
But for me, that's a really good sign that Kerr has already been around a system where that offense had success. So I think he has a good blueprint at hand already.
And I think
I think that's right.
Oh, me too. And I think it also dovetails into what I like most about him as a possible coach. You know, obviously, he doesn't have any experience, you know, with coaching a team, but he has an amazing amount of experience as a player. You know, he not only played under Greg Popovich and Phil Jackson, which would, you know, we hear all the time, and that should be the highlight reel to what he's been able to accomplish as a player, but that's not the only people he's played for. He also played under Lute Olson, a phenomenal coach down at Arizona, and just like Scott alluded to, he was the GM where he got to watch Mike D'Antoni not only coach an amazing offense, but coach an amazing offense led by Steve Nash, who is the guy who everybody kind of aspires Curry to be to. So hopefully he can draw from that. And even more than that, he's won 5 championships. He won 4 in a row at one point. And he got to play next to Jordan, not only just generally speaking, but next to Jordan during their 72-win season. So he's seen what kind of psychopathic tactics it takes to win and to win at all costs. So who knows if he can take that stuff and kind of translate it into the coaching position, but nobody can say that this guy doesn't have some very, you know, hopefully applicable experience as a player, you know?
Absolutely, and I think all of that speaks to his adaptability, too. Playing for all those, Popovich is a very different coach than Phil Jackson, and Kerr found a way to fit his talents, which weren't great, into both of those systems to be on a championship team. And I think that's the way that he'll be as a coach, too. I think he'll adapt to the talent around him. If something's not working, he's not afraid to say, this isn't working, I need some help. That was one thing that really spoke to me in the first news conference, was that he has a confidence about him, but it's not egotistical. There's some bit of conservation with it, where he doesn't know everything yet, but he wants to. He's confident that he's going to, and he wants to ask the right people the right questions, get the right answers, and then apply that to this team. And I think that's what he did as a player, so it makes sense that he could do that as a coach.
And that's what the hell Jackson didn't do, right? I mean, that was one of the things that we've heard, is that he was unwilling to take advice, that he turned on the assistant coaches when they proved to be good. So that, you know, half a guy who's willing to listen to others. I mean, he's already said he wants head coaching experience on his bench as an assistant coach. So he seems like he's got a certain sense of confidence that Mark Jackson didn't.
Yeah, and I think Jackson probably, again, he had an earned stubbornness. What he was doing was working, and sometimes it was boring to watch when they ran isolation sets and dumped it down the post, but the team got better every year. They got better defensively. They got better rebounding, really changing the identity and the culture of the Warriors. So he earned that stubbornness, but I think you have to be able to listen and adapt at some point. And at least from the day one, that's what Kerr's saying he's going to do.
But do you think maybe his relationship with the management might be almost too close? I know he's talked about being going on golfing trips with Lacob. At some point, does he just become Lacob's puppet, or do you think he has the ability to stand up and say, Joe, you need to back off here and just let me handle this?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, because it can be, no matter how smart Lacob and Myers and Travis Schlink and Kirk Lacob and Steve Kerr are, if they're just in a room nodding and smiling at each other and talking about how smart they are, they don't improve, they don't adapt. And so I think that's where guys like Jerry West are really important. I think that's why Steve Kerr's coaching staff is going to be really important, so that you have some people that are naysayers, that say, they play devil's advocate all the time, that if you've won 10 games in a row, you have somebody in there saying, well, we should have figured out a way to win an 11th out of 10 games. You know, just always want more. And so I think they have those people in the organization. But it's a really interesting point, because that would be super dangerous if they're all just in there telling each other how great they are.
I mean, Jerry West specific, there's no way that guy goes into any room at any point and just nods and smiles. You know, I think he'd be throwing daggers immediately if he found himself in that room. You know what else I liked about this? This has less to do with Steve Kerr specifically, more to do with where we are as an organization, generally speaking. But what this move showed me is that when Joe Lacob wants something for the team, he is not afraid to not only spend, but overspend to get it. You know, and that, God, we've so many years under Cohen where he wouldn't spend money on players, let alone coaches, that it was just cool to see kind of where we are and how bright the future may be if he's willing to do that going forward.
Yeah, I think one of the first things that Joe Lacob said, and Peter Guber too, when they came in, is that they were going to be active and aggressive, and that money was no object to him. And when people say that right off the bat, of course you're skeptical, especially after your owner had been Cohan for so long. But Lacob and Goober have proven that. They've bought draft picks each year. They've gone out and spent, given people extensions. They just extended Bogut. They promised that they're going to extend Klay Thompson. And they've made some trades that looked impossible. You know, they went into last season's offseason with salary cap problems. They were cash strapped. They had no draft picks. And they turn around and come out of it with a first-round pick in Nemanja Nedović and an all-world defender in Andre Iguodala while getting rid of some terrible contracts in Biedrins and Jefferson. So sure. I think they're creative and aggressive. And when they want something, they seem to find a way to go get it.
I totally agree, and I think it's actually worked out quite well, you know, especially right there given that laundry list of successes. But I also, at some point, it's going to be not so successful. I'm just wondering, paying Kerr, who hasn't coached, $25 million for 5 years, when you had Mark Jackson on a 3-year contract worth $6 million? I mean, do you feel like they just overpaid this guy?
Does that even matter, though? I mean, why be concerned about it, Scott? Because it's not coming off the salary cap. I mean, is it more like the effect on the ticket prices? Do you not like just the overall idea? I mean, what's the downside of overpaying this guy?
Well, I'll turn that over to Rusty.
Because you don't have an answer, you bastard. What do you think, Rusty? Is there a downside to that?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I can see as a downside there is if it becomes a problem in the locker room. If some of the guys are like, really, this guy's making $5 million. That's such a huge number in a player's league. You know, Greg Popovich and Doc Rivers and now Stan Van Gundy make more money than that. So that's a pretty elite class to be in. And look, I from everything I hear, Steve Kerr is going to work so hard that he's going to deserve $25 million a year, let alone five. So I think he's going to work hard enough to deserve that, and I think he's probably going to end up being good enough to deserve that. But the only problem I can see with that is that if that becomes an issue for the players, because some of these guys have taken less to stay here. Curry could have not taken an extension and gotten a max probably. If Andrew Bogut hit the free agent market, he probably would get maxed. So some guys have made monetary decisions to stay with the Warriors. So that's the only place I can see it becoming a gripe. But again, this doesn't seem like the kind of locker room where that would happen.
That's fair. Oh, you know, I mean, Curry, we got an ankle injury discount that proved not to be necessary, but I completely hear what you're saying. And I mean, to kind of dovetail it, the other concern about that is the second I heard the $5 million, $25 million, my first thought was, how pissed is Mark Jackson somewhere? You know, he got, what was it, like $8 million over 3 years, was fighting for everything he possibly could to get an extension. Then they turned over to another coach who had never coached anything, certainly hadn't gotten 51 wins and to the seventh game of a playoff series, and they gave him, you know, Greg Popovich money. And if these players do love Jackson in the way you described and the way we're hearing, I can see a little bit of resentment from that. You know, like they wouldn't give our boy anything, and they gave this new guy $5 million a year. So, no, that's
sure.
Fair. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and the one thing that probably, I mean, there are so many similarities between Jackson and Kerr. Never coached before, coming straight out of the broadcast booth, have family in Southern California. Many similarities that you can make the link and say, how did this guy get this minuscule contract, and then now Kerr gets 5 years for $25 million. But Kerr was being courted by one of the smartest minds in the world in Phil Jackson. And at the time when Mark Jackson was hired, nobody was coming after him. So you make your own price.
That's completely fair, and it actually leads to my last upside of the Kerr hiring. What the Warriors and Joe Lacob did is something that the league has been trying to do for the last 15 years and never has successfully been able to do it. They beat Phil Jackson. You know, he was his first choice, and these guys stepped in. Now, it wasn't on the basketball court, but hey, you know, you take whatever victories you can get. Other upsides. I mean, is there anything else that's sticking out in your guys' minds that you're happy about as Steve Kerr's possibilities as a coach?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that I started to talk about that to me was really impressive was this quiet confidence without making it feel like he knows it all. I thought it was so impressive in his first news conference to say, look, I want head coaching experience on my bench. I need that help. He talked about maybe even doing something similar to what the NFL does, where you almost have an offensive and a defensive coordinator, two guys who are really involved in those two things. Because head coaches have so many CEO responsibilities, and he's going to be learning all that stuff. So he thinks it's really important to have really good staff around him. And I think that's so important in every walk of life, is to surround yourself with people who are smarter than you and think differently than you.
Sure.
And it sounds like that's what he wants to do.
And it sounds like that's what he did in Phoenix, where he brought together, I mean, from what I hear about it, that organization, from the guy who did the laundry up to the head coach, was seamlessly integrated with each other. They were a tight-knit group that all loved being a part of an organization that's ran by Steve Kerr. And so I think that he's really going to be able to bring everyone together. And I don't know, I see the players getting over the whole Mark Jackson thing pretty quick once the season gets underway.
And what you don't know, Rusty, is the amazing research skills we bring to the show. Yes, we did look into the laundry person at the Phoenix team, and we know just how well all of that worked out. So that's what we bring to the table, buddy.
That is so impressive. I'd like to do an interview with the laundry guy.
Well, you're going to have to come through us, more through Scott specifically. He's got a line on that guy. All right. Well, if there's not other exhaustive things to talk about as upsides, then let's peer into the possible downsides. What concerns you guys about Steve Kerr as a coach?
To me, the biggest thing is inexperience. And it feels like a funny thing to say about a guy who's been in the league for 26 years. But you never know how good you're going to be at anything until you do it. And there have been great players in the league who didn't translate into great coaches. There have been great GMs in the league who didn't translate into great coaches. It's not for everybody. And so the one fear, the one that stands out to me the most, would be just that inexperience. He's done a lot of things in the league, but he's never done this.
Right. And I think he may be too nice a guy. That's what I'm worried about. Like, is he going to be able to get in people's faces or kind of lay it down to the point where somebody respects him and really is going to put it all out there to follow him? Because he just, I don't know, he's always smiling and seems like nothing ever ruffles him.
Did you read that story about the fight he had with Michael Jordan? Supposedly when he first joined the Bulls in training camp, he got into a scuffle with Jordan, because I had the exact same concern as you, Scott. And then when you read that, he apparently walked away with a black eye, but he earned Jordan's respect in the process. And I'm hoping that kind of shows that when push comes to shove, this guy can get nasty with the best of them, especially if he's a brand new member and is guarding the best player on earth and was willing to throw blows with him. Perhaps that's an upside. Following up on what you said, Rusty, completely agree with the lack of experience, and it worries me for a couple of reasons. One, I think just like anything else on earth, there is a learning curve associated with being a coach. So even if you're the best coach ever, let's say you're Greg Popovich, I am sure during your first year, it's going to take a while to learn the ropes. And because of the way we got rid of Jackson, this team doesn't seem to have a whole lot of leeway for a step back. You know, if they don't get to the second round of the playoffs, if they don't put up 52 wins so that it's one more than the year before, this is going to be possibly be seen as maybe not a failure, but certainly not a success. And that's kind of unfair for a guy who's just taken the reins.
Right. No, I think that's exactly right. The expectations now are so high that there are, as much as the Warriors want to say and Kerr wanted to say in his opening presser, that there's not a win total that they're going after, that there's not a seed that they're going after. That's what he's going to be judged on. That's what all professional athletes, coaches, GMs, owners are judged on, are win totals. And so he's going to be judged against what Mark Jackson did in his last season. He had the team progressing. They got the 51 wins. They were in back-to-back playoffs. So if there's anything that appears like a step back, that's when the fans start grumbling. You might hear something in the locker room. And it's not fair, because it's his first year and you're going to have to learn on the job. But you know exactly that that's what's going to happen.
Right. And then I'll give you another kind of a little bit more of an esoteric example, but I'll throw it out there anyways. And I promise this comes back to Kerr. But my wife's a teacher, and teachers are underpaid and underrespected for multiple reasons. But one of them is that the actual act of teaching isn't seen as a skill. I'll give you an example. People think that a NASA scientist could quit, you know, being a NASA and then immediately teach science in high school because he knows science. But that ignores the actual skill of taking information and being able to instill that information in somebody else. Apply that to Kerr. We've talked about all the amazing experience this guy has, and there's no argument about it. He has learned under some of the best basketball minds there is to learn from. But what we don't know, what we have never seen, is can he take that information and put it in to another player's head? You know, can he associate with these guys and can he teach them? And, you know, he was an announcer, which kind of takes the similar skill. He was able to take somewhat complex topics and give it off to a fairly stupid American audience. But I still think there's a disconnect there. And, you know, we're going to have to see him do it before we know he can.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to take a wait-and-see approach. The one thing I would say on that is one thing that a teacher really has to do is figure out how to get in touch with, how to drive each of their students, and they're all so different.
Yep.
And so that's a real talent, a real skill, to be able to figure out what makes each person tick and how can I teach them, how can I make them want to know this. And I think that's something you have to have in coaching. And throughout Kerr's career, he's played with guys who are very different. He's played with Tim Duncan and Rasheed Wallace, and both speak lovingly about him. You know, he's found ways to relate to anyone. And so I think that's something that at least leans toward he's probably going to be a good teacher, a good coach, a guy who can figure out a way to relate to everyone in the locker room.
I was so worried about that teaching analogy. Even if you didn't actually agree with it and you're just backing me for the purpose of the show, you are the man. You know, nicely done, man.
Little segue there.
Yeah, it was what it was, you know. All right, I ran this by Scott before we got on the air. Let me run it by you now. And it's, I don't know if it's my biggest concern. I don't know if I'm just being paranoid, so let me throw it out there. You mentioned it, that one of the main reasons Kerr has this kind of golden boy image is because Phil Jackson came down from on high, tapped him on the shoulder, and wanted him for the Knicks job. And the entire league jumped up. We recognize him as an amazing talent now. And, you know, the Warriors were one of many teams ready to overpay for his services because Phil Jackson had anointed him. But since that happened, you know, we're hearing all the rest of the Knicks candidates are also just old Jackson players. You've got Luke Walton. You've got Derek Fisher. You've got, you know, Tyronn Lue. This has made me a little bit afraid that it wasn't that Jackson identified Kerr as some golden mind. It's that he wanted an ex-player who he'd have an amazing power dynamic with, who knew his offense, and who he could work with. And, you know, Phil Jackson strikes me as the type of guy, you know, right when the Warriors stepped in and offered the 5 years and $25 million, and New York didn't. You know, they stopped at four, where Phil kind of privately chuckled to himself and was like, you know, I like him, but Jesus, you know, I'll take Luke Walton, you know?
Yeah.
So, I guess in that scenario, we just paid, you know, way overpaid for Phil Jackson's first choice as puppet.
Yeah, no, I think that's a thing to barely be leery of. If Phil Jackson liked anybody, you would think the rest of the league would jump.
Right.
And they did. They did with Steve Kerr. But it's been interesting for me to watch since then. You hear Derek Fisher's name and Luke Walton's name, and even Scottie Pippen was mentioned. Scott Williams, Bill Cartwright. All these guys have been mentioned, and the rest of the league isn't clamoring the same way they did for Kerr. So I think that speaks to Kerr's relationships around the league that he's built over 26 years, that he's proven to a bunch of people that he's smart. I think that probably speaks to his preparation, that manifesto that we're going to hunt down and read. I'm not sure that any of these other candidates have that, and that's why you saw the league react so differently to Kerr than they are to all these other candidates.
You know, right when I thought we were on the same team after the whole teacher thing, now you just blew my point out of the water there. I mean, nicely handled. You know, nicely handled. I mean, what am I going to say? Any other downsides that are searing into you guys?
I think those are the big ones to me. The only other thing that I would be a little interested to see what happens is Mark Jackson spoke the same language as the players. He played the same game, knew the same spots.
Yep.
Was very, very religious, which a lot of the guys in the locker room are. He spoke the same language as the team. So that'll be one thing that's really interesting to me, that Kerr knows how to speak the front office game. It'll be interesting to see if he knows how to speak the language necessary for the Warriors locker room. I think his history says that he will, like the way that he found a way to link with both Rasheed Wallace and Tim Duncan. But I think it's something that we have to watch, have to be a little bit leery about.
Not only his history, but like you mentioned earlier, these guys on the Warriors right now, they're basketball heads, and Kerr's going to be able to come in and be dropping stories about Jordan, dropping stories about Duncan and Parker, and, I mean, going all the way back to Lute Olson and, you know, playing in the late 80s. So I think through that and kind of the common love for the game, these guys will probably really enjoy – Steve Kerr.
I really hope you guys are right. What I was thinking over the last week or so since the signing is that for the first time as a Warrior fan, I am really, really interested in seeing the schedule. More than that, I'm really interested in seeing the first 20 games. Because, you know, they go 15-5, no one's going to care. We're not going to talk about Jackson anymore. We're not going to be worried about the offense. You know, they're fine. If they go 5-15 or even 10-10, you know, now there's going to be a media storm. You know, people are going to justifiably go back to the players and ask them, you know, what do you think is going on here? Do you miss Mark Jackson? You know, those kind of things. So I feel like that's really going to weigh in, you know?
Yeah, and wonder if 10 of those early losses, you know, if half of them are at home against teams that didn't make the playoffs last year. Remember, that was one of the things that made Lake
exactly.
up so furious this year, was dropping home games to beatable teams. And so, yeah, that's a great point that I hadn't thought about, is the schedule will be really interesting, because you're going to want to look good at home. That's really important to Lake up, and they should be looking further down the road and knowing that there's a growing experience here and thinking about how good they're going to be come playoff time. But they're going to want immediate results, and they're going to want them at home. They're going to want them on national TV. They're all really worried about what the fans think and what their image is around the league.
Yeah, it's going to raise the question, you know, were you right to fire Jackson? I mean, would you have fired Jackson?
You know what? I think they got themselves into a spot where they almost had to. He wasn't going to go into his final year without an extension. And I actually thought they were going to say, look, if you hire a great lead assistant coach and change a couple of things with how you communicate with the GM and the owner and do these things, we'll bring you back for this final year, but no extension. And I thought that was going to force Jackson's hand, where he had to say, well, I'm not going to do that.
Exactly.
But they didn't. They never gave him a chance to make any amendments or to change it. They just flat out fired him.
Is that okay? I'm glad you said that, actually, because I one of the questions I wanted to ask you in that final meeting, I've read some articles suggesting they just let him go. I've read other articles suggesting they asked him, you know, will you bring on other assistant coaches? Do you know if that happened, or do they just let his ass go?
No, I was told before the meeting that they were going to tell him, here's a couple of things that you can do to salvage your job. By Tuesday, when the meeting happened, I got the chance to talk to Joe Lacob right after.
Yeah.
And he said that they had already made their mind up. There was no conversation about anything he could do. They just went in and said, I'm sorry, we're parting ways.
Huh.
We really appreciate what you've done for us the last 3 years, but we feel we need to go in a different direction. And there was no conversation about things that he could change.
All right, well, let's use that as a perfect transition. I'll put on our Joe Lacob hats. Bottom line, gentlemen, was the Steve Kerr signing a good idea? Was it the right move?
I know it's sexy to have an opinion right now, but I don't know that I do. For me, it's such a wait and see thing. I don't know that we'll know even at the end of next year. I think the way Kerr and now Lacob and Myers are talking, they're talking about a 5-year plan, and that's not been the way of the Warriors. They've wanted instant success, instant results. So I'm not sure we'll know this for years. I guess my gut instinct is that it was probably the right move. It was probably time. Jackson had done everything he could to change the climate and the culture of the team, and it was probably time to get a new coach, because one of the only ways they're going to grow now is organically, and so you maybe have to have a better coach than he was.
Right. I'm feeling sexy. I'll go ahead and drop an opinion. I don't know, and this is kind of a cryptic way to put it, but I'll say it anyways. I think it was the right move, even if I don't know he was the right coach, and here's what I mean by that. If even a third of the things we were hearing about Mark Jackson alienating the other team members, not allowing Jerry West to come into practice, if any of that was true, then they had to let him go. But because Jackson had such an amazing connection with this team, if they had let him go and then swung and missed on both their top two choices, they were going to face a storm. You know, there's no way that goes well. There's no way they go back to this locker room and still have the kind of respect put back to them. So once they missed out on Van Gundy, I thought it was remarkably important that they did bring in Kerr. So I was, you know, I like it. I like that he went out there, overpaid him, and brought him in and kind of solidified this view of the Warriors, because, you know, it's all been up, up, and up. Then when they dropped Jackson, the media started questioning a little bit. Do they know what they're doing? And I think they brought the national attention and the spotlight back into the right direction by bringing Kerr in. So they did what they had to do. We'll see whether or not he's a good coach.
Well, I mean, one thing that's been absent in our conversation so far is what were the alternatives to Kerr? And there were some other good coaches that were out there. Yep. I think Stan Van Gundy was still probably most people's number one choice. Me personally, after Van Gundy went, I wanted them to get Lionel Hollins, and I think he would have been a better selection than Kerr. I mean, Lionel Hollins, look at that track record. The guy took the Memphis Grizzlies to the Western Conference Finals twice, including last year, and that is not the best. I mean, the Grizzlies are not an amazing team. So I think it's remarkable that he wasn't picked up by anyone and is not in more discussions for head coaching positions.
So wrong move. I mean, if assuming that Hollins would have taken the job, you think they should have given that money to him?
Yeah, I do.
Huh. What do you think about that, Rashi? I mean, I think that there's a lot of similarities between Hollins and Jackson, and I think that it would have been more of a lateral step than a step forward. But I don't know. I mean, what do you agree with Scott?
That would be my one hesitation, is that they are so similar, Jackson and Hollins. You know, they didn't renew his contract in Memphis because he wouldn't let some of the front office people come to practices.
Yeah.
He's a faith-based guy. He took a lot of credit for turning around that franchise and taking it further than it probably could with the roster the way it was. I think there are a lot of similarities, and I agree that Hollins is probably a tactical step up as a coach from Jackson, but I think the storm of media and fans, would have linked. They would have just said they just hired another Jackson. It doesn't make sense. Whether it was the right move or not, it wouldn't have been received well.
Did you want Van Gundy? I did. I was disappointed when they lost out on him. I thought they made the right move, not handing him Meyer's job. So, you know, they handled it in the way they had to, but I would have preferred him coming in as a coach, if only because of his track record. What do you think, man? Who was your first choice, I guess, is a better way to ask it.
Couldn't have said it better. I thought Van Gundy was high above everybody else as the top choice.
Yeah.
I think he's done well with a similar roster to what the Warriors have. Plus, he's shown the ability to adapt. I think he's super smart. But the Warriors simply couldn't do it. They like the way their decision-making goes right now, with that group of people in a room and Joe Lacob making the final yes or no.
Yeah.
And at some point, we've got to give them – they've built up some credibility. They've made the right moves quite a bit. And if you think about just the hirings, I mean, Joe Lacob hired Jerry West, Rick Welts, two of the smartest people in the NBA.
Yep.
He hired Bob Myers when nobody else was looking at him. He hired Mark Jackson to change the face and the culture of the team. Every hire he's made has looked really good.
Yeah, that is 100% correct, man. And hopefully we'll continue to flow in the exact right direction. Well, I would be remiss if I didn't cover this subject with you. The other huge thing that we're starting to hear now is the Kevin Love rumors. Kevin Love is definitely, or at least has informed Minnesota, that after next year he is not going to pick up an option with them. And because of that, the trade rumors that were already swirling have taken on like a hurricane kind of approach. Now, what do you think, man? One, would you like to see the Warriors make a move for Kevin Love? And two, if so, who would you be willing to cough up to get him?
I think Kevin Love would be a perfect fit. He stretches the floor, which is one thing that Kerr wants to do. Plus, you can dump it down to him in the post and get some easy buckets down there, and he's a willing passer out of that. That's something I think the Warriors have desperately missed, is somebody they could dump it down there and consistently get good shots. So I think he would be a beautiful fit. And on the surface, I look at it, and the Warriors say they don't want to give up Klay Thompson, they don't have a draft pick this year to trade. So on the surface, it looks like there's no way they can make this happen. But the one thing in the NBA is that the player has a ton of control.
Sure.
And if Love comes out and says, look, I'm not signing an extension with anybody but the Warriors, then I think all the other teams that maybe can offer better packages drop out.
Sure.
And a package of David Lee, Harrison Barnes, and the 2015 first-round pick doesn't look so bad for a guy that you're going to lose anyway. So I think there's a possibility, and we've seen the Warriors pull off things that look even more outlandish than this in the past.
I mean, everybody would include D. Lee and Harrison, I think. Would you include Clay? Let's say they say no to that for whatever reason. Love doesn't exercise the power you were just talking about. Do you give them Lee and Clay Thompson?
I wouldn't do it. I think so highly of Klay Thompson, where he is now, and the work that he does in the summer to improve himself every year. I think he's a superstar in the making. And I think he's such a perfect complement for what they already have. He guards point guards so that Curry doesn't have to, and he doesn't demand the ball. He can run off screens and be a decoy forever, and he doesn't complain about that. He rebounds well for a guard now. He does so many things that I think this team needs, and I think he's going to get way better. I wouldn't include him in just about any deal that I could think of.
Even with all the money you're going to have to pay him coming up?
Yeah, because you're going to have to pay anybody that now. The Warriors know, and they've done really well the last 2 years trying to get under the luxury tax, because it's so punitive to do it in back-to-back years. But yeah. now they've set it up where they're going to have to pay, and they thought they were going to have to pay both Klay and Harrison. So in this deal, if you can get rid of Lee and Harrison, two guys, one guy who's making big money and one who's about to, and you only take one big contract back, it actually kind of puts you in a better spot.
It pains me to say this, but I mean, if they're willing to take D. Lee and Harrison in a first rounder, then you know they can take my house in addition to that, just as a thank you. I'd do that in a heartbeat. Yeah. If they do want Klay Thompson, I echo everything you said about his upside. I love Klay, not to mention the fact that Jerry West tapped him on the shoulder, which makes him a Superman, in my mind. You know, when they when West selected him for the draft, but. God, Kevin Love, man, the opportunity to add another bona fide superstar next to Curry, and assuming that we could just push Barnes back into the starting lineup and make Iguodala our shooting guard, I think I would include him. Scott, am I right in assuming you'd give up either of those guys? I know you are a heated, not so much of a proponent for old Klay.
I'm not a huge Klay Thompson guy. I would definitely give him up. I mean, what we need to, I think, consider is that this trade doesn't have to be binary. It doesn't have to be Warriors and Wolves. You can bring a third team into this, and then it gets really interesting from there.
Sure. No, that's absolutely right. Last question for you, Rusty. Overall, you know, now the Warriors are out. I am no longer as involved in the playoffs as I should be. In fact, I'm really just bitter watching everyone really play out. I'm assuming you're still watching. Who's your champ?
You know what? I would love to see San Antonio win it. I think I'm probably a little bit biased to the story of the old guys who we always count out, and then they keep coming back and playing beautiful basketball.
Sure.
I think it would be a great story after blowing it last year in Game 6 for them to come back and fight their way through it and do it. And it'd make for an even better story if then they all walk off the court together and say, we're done. We're going out on top. So I guess that's my choice, and I wonder how much of it is just bias, but that's my choice.
I'm with you, and for an even more biased reason, if they do walk away, it helps the Warriors next year. Hopefully that's exactly what we'll see. Hey, man, thank you. You always add so much to the show. Another phenomenal job this time. We really appreciate you stopping in and dropping knowledge.
Sure thing. I always appreciate you guys having me. You guys make it really fun.
Rusty is always such a great sport, and he dropped phenomenal takes today the same way he has every time he's been in the huddle. I appreciate it so much when he comes in.
I mean, he's just got so much crazy knowledge and insight that it's really refreshing to hear it.
And he was willing to agree with me a couple times, which really is the only thing I really care about. That said, thank you guys for listening. We appreciate it every week. That was certainly true this week. And please remember that our email address is warriorshuddle@gmail.com. We can be found on Twitter at warriorshuddle. Our website remains www.warriorsworld.net. And we can be found on a bunch of podcasting services, including iTunes, where if you guys wouldn't mind hopping on there, drop a review for us. We would really, really appreciate it. Thanks, and we'll see you guys in a couple weeks.
We're the Cavs. We play out west. And we're working hard to be our best. Ask anyone and you will find. We don't do drugs and wrecks your mind.
W-I-L-D. Cats. W-I-L-D. Wildcats. W-I-L-D. Cats. The Wild About the Cats. When Craig McMillan is in the game.
Good.